wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora and welcome to Dear Science This Week. How are you going today, Krishla?
Very well, thank you.
Good to hear, good to hear. We've got some pretty cool stories on the radar today. This first one, we'll just get straight into it. This massive spider web that they've discovered, can you tell us all about it?
Yeah, so there's a cave that's just on the border between Greece and Albania, and it had a bit of a surprise.
It sounds absolutely terrifying. I can't imagine who came across this.
Yeah, so it actually was some cavers about 2 or 3 years ago had seen it, and then some scientists have gone back and actually studied it. And so it's, they're one of the biggest observed spider webs ever that they estimate has more than 111,000 spiders in it.
That is insane.
Wow. So at the entrance to this cave, there's a narrow sort of passage. It's got a low ceiling, and basically there's it's permanently dark, and there's just this spider web along the side of it that measures at about 106 square meters.
So, wow.
It's huge. It's got... Basically, it's, they describe it as being a patchwork of thousands of individual funnel-shaped webs. And so you can actually go online and you see one of these cavers slash researchers just, like, touch the edge of it, and it kind of just, like, gently moves, and it's phenomenal.
Is it, like, one big long line of it, or is it, like, cubic? Or, I don't know. How does this work? Is it kind of layers of it?
Yeah, no, it's like you think of it, it's just there's the wall and the ceiling, and it's just almost like a big sail in front of it. Like it's, and there's, just all these spiders that have made their webs, and they've all joined together and had this massive spider web. Like, it's huge.
And there's heaps of different species of spiders in here.
Yeah, so there are a lot of different species of spiders, but it's dominated by two main species. So these two common species are known as Tegernaria domestica, which you also would know in these areas is known as domestic house spider. So, and Prenergon vagans. And so... these are both pretty common species. Like they, you know, they do live near human dwellings, but they've never been seen living together before. So this was a surprise to like look at this web and go, oh, well, these two spiders dominating this, and they know this by observation and what they sampled and doing some DNA analysis and that. So they estimate there's about 69,000 of this Tegernaria domestica and about 42,000 of this Prenergon vagans.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and so like, well, usually what you do observe when these things are living near human dwellings and stuff is that the domestica species actually preys on the vagan species. And so they're like, well, okay. Why the shift in behavior? And they think it's because it is always dark. So this domestica species can't really see to hunt, and so it's not hunting. So what are these things eating then? Like, how are they surviving and building this massive spider web?
Yeah.
So they've used stable isotopes. So you look at the levels of carbon-13 and nitrogen-15, and it tells you what's called the trophic level. So this is like whether you're the bottom of the food chain or the next step up or the next step up. And so what they were able to postulate from these analyses is that these spiders feed on these non-biting midges that obviously get caught in this massive web.
Yeah.
And those midges are actually feeding on a microbial biofilm that bacteria, sulfur oxidizing bacteria produce, because this cave has got a lot of sulfur in it. Like, it's got a lot of hydrogen sulfur. It must have stunk to be like, they didn't mention the smell, but it must have. And so these spiders have a very sulfur rich diet, which means that their actual microbiome is really different to the ones that you would see outside of the cave. And they're actually, also they did the genetics. And so the species of these spiders inside the cave are, genetically distinct from the ones outside the cave because of just how they've evolved over time in this environment.
Yeah, and it would be a benefit to them to have such a big spider web, or is it it always a benefit for a spider to grow it as big as possible?
It can catch its prey and they can fly into it.
I guess the fact that it's dark and you want to catch a lot of prey, then yeah, maybe it is that, that being this community does have of a benefit to them.
Yeah, yeah. That's insane. That's yeah. so cool.
So it's like a little commune kind of the
yeah,
exactly. They're living to you.
Yeah, spider commune. Yeah. Yeah, between where was it? Albania
and Greece.
And so, Greece.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, very yeah. cool. Okay, we'll chuck on to our next topic. Another icky one about bacteria. This is kind of an interesting story. I was having a little read, but tell us about what they've found here.
Yeah, so we don't really think about bacteria in terms of how they move, right? But they do move. And it's important to understand how they move because they can form communities, they can spread, and they can escape, right? So if you're trying to kill bacteria and they're moving away...
Yeah.
This is important to understand these things. And so for a long time, we've kind of understood bacterial movement as being based on flagella. So this is like you'll see some pictures or cartoons of a bacteria where they've got like a whip-like tail. And
yeah.
this is a flagella.
Right.
And it basically propels the bacteria. And so not all bacteria have these. So it was only some in that. And so we kind of – this was the way the bacteria moved. And so there was this group. And they were going to do some research, and they wanted a negative control. So they wanted bacteria that had these flagella, but that they didn't move. And so they obviously did some modification to these bacteria to stop the flagella working.
Mm.
And then observed, and the bacteria still moved. So it was so they're kind of scratching their heads going, oh, what? Like, why? And so it took them several years. They've been working on this problem.
Oh, wow.
And so what they found, so the bacteria they were looking at were E. coli and Salmonella. So these are two bacteria we know from food poisoning and health infections and stuff like this. And what these bacteria do is they feed on sugars like glucose and maltose. And when they feed on these sugars, they produce byproducts. And some of these byproducts are acidic. And so what happens is if this is on a moist surface, if these bacteria are basically excreting these acidic compounds, it effectively draws water up from the environment. And so you get a small current, and because bacteria are tiny, they don't need much to move.
Yeah,
and so they're basically surfing the waves kind of thing. They're getting pushed along by this current of this water movement. And so that's how they're managing to work, move across these moist surfaces.
Oh.
And so they called it swashing. So with the flagella moving, they called it swarming.
Swashing.
And so... obviously, for this to happen, you do need fermentable sugars, right? Like this is a byproduct of these bacteria feeding on these sugars. But in the human body, that's not a problem. We got a lot of these fermentable sugars. So this is, this has implications for infection and how bacteria move on, like if you have a medical catheter, an implant, and, different equipment. And so why this is really important to have observed is that, there's been a lot of focus on... how do you stop the flagella working so that you stop bacteria moving and keep it in the one place you can treat it?
Yeah, of course.
But that's not the only part of the problem now. And so what they're saying is that we really need to think about these different mechanisms and understand these different mechanisms because we might need more than one arrow to hit the target sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
There was another study that has also just come out, which was about another type of bacteria called flavobacteria. It's this group. And they have an interesting system called the type 9 secretion system, or T9SS. And they described it as they glide along the surface. And so what this secretion system does is it basically releases some protein that's kind of, it's a bit adhesive, and it kind of coats the bacteria like a belt. And it uses it to like basically pull the bacteria along. So it kind of spirals around the bacteria and can kind of pull it forward. And if you make a minor change in this protein that's being excreted, it goes from going rotating clockwise to counterclockwise. And so they're like, no one had kind of noticed that there was this small change could lead to this rotor difference. And again, why this is important is, again, understanding this movement. But these types of bacteria are also really interesting in that sometimes they have a negative impact. So if they're in our mouth, like in our oral microbiome, they can be bad, like gum disease. You can get inflammation that affects the mouth, the brain, and so we don't want them. But if they're in your gut, these proteins that they release actually protect antibodies. So this can be really good if you're taking oral vaccines because it's a protective mechanism.
Okay.
So we don't just want to kill them. We want to keep them sometimes and get rid of them some other times.
Yeah,
and so
right.
Understanding how they're moving and what we can target is really important.
That is such a crazy field of science to be in. I never even thought about how bacteria move or anything. Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
That is really crazy.
Yeah. Finally, our last topic, let's go into something a bit more interesting. It's award season at the moment, it seems. We've got the Marsden Science... Oh, these aren't awards. Well, funding awards, I suppose, is
Interesting...
Still an important thing for science. Tell us about these ones.
So it's kind of an interesting way. They kind of get... You say that they were awarded, but it's actually funding to do science.
So this
is not science that's been done. Ideas for things to investigate for the future. So the Marsden...
Yeah, it's like professors and stuff are getting these awards.
Exactly. So it's, you know, like if you... it's your lecturers that are involved in fundamental research can apply to this fund. So earlier in the year, or maybe end of last year, there was a bit of in the news about how people doing humanities and social sciences could no longer apply to this fund. So now it's very engineering, science, bit of medical sort of stuff into it. They've awarded the projects that had, you know, that had applications that they felt were, that they could fund and that were good.
How much funding is available?
So this year, just over $80 million to cover 107 projects.
Wow.
Next year, it'll go down to about 56.
Oh.
This fund's facing some cuts. So
that's a big change though.
Yeah. Yeah. The science funding environment in New Zealand's changing a lot at the moment. So there's various initiatives and things going on.
All right.
So I thought, well, it's kind of, we don't really hear about these stories often, and it's kind of interesting to see what we might, you know, over the next 3 years, we might get some Dear Science stories out of some of these projects, right?
Yeah, what are some of the ones that
So we've got the way it worked this year, which will change again a bit next year, where they will have a couple of really big awards, and then they'll have some just standard awards, and then they'll have some what they call fast starts. So this is for people that are earlier in their career to get started. So the two big awards, one went to Renata Meyer, who's in statistics here at University of Auckland. So she's leading the project, and then there's a big team that works on the project.
Cool.
And it's called Interstellar Asteroids, Black Holes, and the Big Bang.
Okay.
Yeah, and so basically they're interested in exploring basically the fundamental nature of the universe through interpretation of gravitational waves. And so by getting this funding, it also allows them to continue a collaboration with the International Laser Interferometry Space Antenna Consortium. And this is basically a consortium that has some instrumentation that allows them to image the entire night sky every 4 nights. And so from all this data, they can start to build up a bigger picture of, the universe kind of thing. So it's, you know.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah. The other big council award is led by Dr. Phil Novus from the Bioeconomy Science Institute, and it was titled Archaeological Preservation of Maori Rock Art, Including Wider Knowledge Building and Tourism Opportunities. So they're going to investigate more than 900 instances of cave and rock shelter rock art that we have in New Zealand. A lot of it's in the South Island. And what they want to do, they have a two-pronged sort of part to the study. The first part is to understand more about the environments that the rock art was in and what those environments would have been in the past. So paleoecology, like looking at ancient DNA, seeing what vegetation was there in the past, what sort of microclimate.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting for, you know, understanding the cultures and the people and how they move and such. And then also analysing the rock art to understand how it's degrading and how we might conserve it and preserve it for the future.
Oh, cool.
And then a couple more. One of these standard ones out of University of Canterbury, Associate Professor Heather Hendrickson. It's called Unlocking a New Genetic Tool to Protect Honeybees in Advanced Biotechnology.
Oh,
and they're interested in, there's a recently discovered, they refer to it as a mobile genetic element called a hitcher. And it basically can move between bacterial genomes. And so it's a hitchhiker, right? And it's carrying genetic information. And it does have this gene that's for a powerful toxin. So they're interested in how is this genetic hitchhiker affecting honeybee larvae health? And so is it a problem? Is it not? And also, like, how could we maybe use this, make a new tool, do something with it? And then finally, the last one I'll talk about is one of these fast starts. So this is one of these younger researchers' projects, and it's out of Cawthorn Institute, which is an institute in Nelson that studies like anything kind of marine seafood and stuff. And it's by Dr. Laura Beese, and it's an evolutionary arms race, understanding the costs and benefits of toxin accumulation in kai moana. And she basically wants to understand how these naturally occurring toxins that you get in shellfish and such affect predator-prey relationships. And she's specifically going to be looking at pippies. And so there's this neurotoxin associated with some marine life and shellfish, tetrodotoxin. And she wants to see if the pippies are using it as a defense against snapper.
Oh,
so it's one of these, yeah. And so there's a, like, it was 107 projects. So this is only four of them. So there's a whole bunch of research that I anticipate that will come out in the next
like
few years.
Like any climate research, I hope?
Yes, no, there's a lot. There's, one of the examples is bacteria in climate. So one of the stories you're going to do later on, you were talking about climate and health.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're now starting to appreciate with climate change, this actually is having quite a bit of an effect on bacteria and its bacteria's antimicrobial resistance, in that with climate changing you can get more antimicrobial resistance. And there's actually one of the projects that was funded which is going to start looking at that in our waterways. And so because climate change, world gets a little bit warmer, probably gets a little bit closer to what the bacteria like to live in in that. And so if we're growing them in the lab, often we incubate them at 28 degrees or 37 degrees. If your waterways are starting to get closer to that more often, growing a bit quicker.
Yeah, it could be a problem. Well, that sounds like a lot of very cool topics for future Dear Science episodes, hopefully.
Stay tuned, we'll see.
Anyway, that's all of our topics for Dear Science today. A quick shout out to MOTAT. If you journey into MOTAT this Sunday, which is the 16th of November, you can celebrate all things train, tram and track with their live day rail. Sounds very cool. Anyway, thank you so much, Kushla, for joining us. Thank you, as always, MOTAT, and thank you, Science. That is Dear Science for today.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.